And so now we're working with the list, you know, with a seven. But again, for 2,500 years, you know, this is a, it's one map of how the mind heads towards awakening. Seven awakening factors. And it's also a little mini map of, you know, how retreat might work for you. And so we're focusing on the third factor, energy and effort. Virya is the Pali word. And actually, virya has a, just like sati, sorry, you know, just like dhamma, just like all of these Pali words, it has so many meanings. So, vicharya can be translated as energy, effort, strength, courage. There's a lot of words in this awakening factor. So, my view of the optimum, fully developed human being, you know, is developing fully head, heart, body, spirit. All four. And some of us gravitate more towards body or heart. Yet, all four are the human endowments. And so, you know, as a dude, I hope I'm not emphasizing the head part too much. I get excited if you've told me you can't stand that right up on mindfulness. Because it's very heady, you know, very scholarly. But all of this scholarly, heady stuff is in service of awakening. And so we just, you know, the Zen tradition, you know, none of this would fly, or this would fly out the window, you know, this approach of the lists and the numbers and this is and that's and the logic. So, you know, when Zennies and Buddhist teachers get together, you know, the Zen tell the Vipassana folks, y'all just explain everything. And the Vipassana folks say, you don't have to explain anything, you know. Shinzen Young said he couldn't be a Zen teacher because he talks too much. So Vipassana was the right tradition for him. We're the talkative tradition. There is a Dharma teacher, and I guest taught at their group. But the week before my talk, no, it's earlier, you know, I gave a talk called The Entire Buddhist Path in a Single Sentence, and of course it took me an hour to give the talk. This teacher had given a talk before mine. And I was just laughing at the title. It's such a Vipassana teacher title. The Dharma in a Nutshell, Part 2. I'm like, you can't call it the Dharma in a Nutshell, Part 2. Only a Vipassana teacher. But this quality of effort comes naturally from what we've been doing so far. First, we were focusing with mindfulness and our motivation for it. Can it come from a helpful place? Right? The unhelpful, we know, doesn't work. It's tight. Or it's lazy. You know, we can go to either extreme. The helpful kind, you know, and it has to do with the word remembering. It's remembering why we want this for ourselves and the world. Why do we want this? So if you can just, you know, close the eyes for a sec. And remember a time when you've been really connected to the moment. It might be here on retreat, it might be a different retreat, but some time when your mind finally shut the hell up and gave you a break. With presence being your primary state, all the stuff that normally afflicts us is just like waves, you know, on top of the ocean. But we're in touch with this deeper sea, this place the mind can go of quiet and clarity and love. And all those waves that seem so steep and turbulent on the surface are still there, but they're just in perspective. Yeah, our rational mind, our thinking mind, we've got to do all that to-ing and fro-ing. And the waves are made of water. They're the same nature as the deep stillness. You know, the movement is coming out of the stillness. But if you can remember a time of being in the flow, in the zone, maybe it's even being bigger than everything that's happening. You're this big, spacious ocean. How would it be to live there? And don't be clouded by the question, is that even possible? Just set that aside. How would it be to live there and to do your life with its busyness, its complexity, relational challenges, work challenges, health challenges? Can you imagine this big, spacious, loving, open, present heart working with it? Knowing that, yeah, something arises. Ideally, it wouldn't cause stress because there's so much equanimity. But if it does, as soon as the stress is over, it's just gone. What's done is done. And also, que sera, sera. You've got that attitude too. What's done is done. Que sera, sera. You're just here. And so the desire for this, you know, we call it sacred desire. This is a very helpful desire. It's not that you're wanting something different than what's here. Remember, desire has the word to want. It has two meanings. To want means is desire, but also to want is to lack, right? That's the other meaning of the word to want. So the unhelpful desire is there's something lacking in this moment. You're wanting something, you're lacking something. You're wanting something other than this moment. But if your desire is targeting you at right here and right now, it's very helpful. So want this till the cows come home. You know, want this for yourself. So that kind of helpful motivation, you know, converts naturally into interest. Because we know, you know, yeah, this moment is all we got. And this moment wobbles on coal legs. This moment is very hard to pin down. So our attention needs to be very, very close because it's changing so fast. So passion for this, zeal for this, enthusiasm, interest, this is very helpful. And so that becomes joyful interest. You know, when our motivation is coming from the helpful place, our interest is kind of joyful. And that joyful interest just leads into energy. We have energy for this. Our energy is usually tied up, fascinated with the stormy seas of samsara. You know, Soyal Rinpoche, you know, this poor, weary mind of ours, beaten senseless by all the to-ing and fro-ing of our mind. We're fascinated by that, and all our energy goes into it. With this helpful motivation and interest, then that energy becomes available for effort. Effort to be here and aware of this moment. And so this virya is energy and effort. It's just energy available to us, and the effort is how we direct the energy. And we direct the energy at knowing this moment, if that's our practice. If we're doing metta, we direct the energy at knowing this metta phrase. And joyful interest converted into energy, we want to be with this moment just because. The moment is its own reward. There's nothing extra we're wanting. Sometimes when my mind is super, super scattered, I have this set of very, very long metta phrases because it just gives my mind, you know, a lot of words to chew on. So every now and then I pull those out. And this is just one of the phrases. May I be completely relaxed and at ease, needing nothing more than this moment. It's a long phrase. But sometimes, it's just so helpful. Reminding me, this moment is its own reward. There's nothing extra I need. Suzuki Roshi wrote this in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. If you think you will get something from practicing Zazen, already you are involved in impure practice. When you make some special effort to achieve something, some excessive quality, some extra element is involved in it. You should get rid of excessive things. Our effort and practice should be directed from achievement to non-achievement. In essence, from doing to being. We don't need an achievement when we're just in presence and love. Presence and love is all we need. And remember how I talked about helpful and unhelpful. Unhelpful motivation always involves something extra. Oh, if I'm really, you know, locked into my breath, I'm going to get X, Y, or Z. I'm going to finally get back to that joyful moment I had earlier today. Joseph Goldstein calls it the in order to mind. Mm-hmm. Your motivation is extra. There's something extra you're wanting. So we know that the Buddha talked about effort as being this balance, the way you would tune a lute, not too tight, not too loose. And the not too tight, the not too loose part, we could call precision. We want to precisely aim our attention at this moment. Trungpa Rinpoche wrote, "We think we are great, broadly significant, and that we cover a whole large area. We see ourselves as having a history and a future, and here we are in our big deal present. But if we look at ourselves clearly in this very moment, we see we are just grains of sand. Just little people concerned only with this little dot, which is called nowness. We can only operate on one dot at a time." Precision is this little dot of nowness. And I know this is repetition for some of you. But in the context of mindfulness of breath, just half a breath, an in-breath or an out-breath. And we can do that. Our effort is aimed so precisely. We can actually decide to notice half a breath and actually do it. So this leads to the second aspect of wise effort, which is relaxation. Because our effort is so precisely aimed, it takes very little energy. Right? Just notice half a breath right now. Just notice this in or this out. How hard was that? It's easy. So, you can relax. We get tight because we're trying to like glue our mind down to the breath or whatever we're noticing and not think. Instead, the reality is our practice is a playground of distraction. And we can come back in any moment and be with this little dot of nowness, a half breath, the sound of a bird. Not too many bird sounds up here, sadly, but, you know, we can be with this little dot. So, it's easy. Relax. Make all your effort go into this moment. Don't try to sit here and notice a ton of moments. Just try to notice one. And then do it again. And again. Steve Armstrong, the Dharma teacher, used an analogy of the microwave towers. Use very little energy to transmit a microwave energy from one tower to another. Maybe it's cell towers. Why do they use so little energy? Because they're so precisely aimed. Okay? We're just knowing what's happening just and only right now. It's all we can do. We can't notice the breath before or the one ahead of us. Just half a breath. That's wise effort. Now we need to bring in this. There's this other quality of remembering with mindfulness. Is remembering in a kind of continual, consistent, persistent way. Because the mind so easily wants to wander off. You want you to be persistent. So we're precise and we're relaxed and we're persistent. We keep coming back. And what keeps bringing us back that you know you want this for yourself. That's that original wholesome motivation converted into interest. I want to be mindful. It's that simple. And you need to remember that. So sati ain't such a bad word after all. So, precise, relaxed, persistent, kind. We want to be very kind to ourselves. This whole inquiry, how are you talking to yourself about your practice? Any judging of it is not only not helpful, it's unhelpful. Are those different? It's completely counterproductive. It isn't neutral, it's counterproductive. Because, you know, we're lost and we come out of being lost. And we're actually mindful for a second. And then we're like, God, I'm so bad at this. Then you're back in distraction. So that's the great news. Judging can't work. Only kindness can. So Jack Kornfield, he loves the analogy of kindness. It's like training a puppy. You know, I guess this is old school because it's back in the day. You want the puppy to pee on the newspaper. So, you know, but the puppy just goes away and does all this puppy things. So you just gently put it back. You're not going to talk meanly to the puppy. It's a puppy. This is what puppies do. So, right? We can be really kind to ourselves. So, you know, Ram Dass's lineage, we could call the be here now lineage. Maybe we'll call our lineage the pee here now lineage. Training the little puppies in our minds. And you all, I think all of you know, my teaching on just saying yay when you realize you were lost because you're already back. It's a good moment when you realize you've been distracted because you're already mindful. Right? We all get that, right? What about this? Also say yay every time you're mindful. Not just when you come back in that moment of mind, but keep it going. And if yay is not your word, yes, awesome, perfect, you know, whatever. Whatever the word is, just a encouraging word. When you're mindful, because you're doing what you want, and it's hard to do what you want. It's hard to get this mind back to the moment sometimes. So this kindness and positive talk so helps your effort. Practice is fun. All you can do is win, because everything you're doing is more than zero. One moment of mindfulness is very good. So everything you're doing is in the win column. Don't compare yourself to some other retreat. And usually what we do is we're in day 3 of a retreat comparing ourselves to day 10. That's just a wackadoodle. Don't just compare yourself to zero. Am I more than zero? Then you're in the plus column. Awesome. Because remember, this is the Buddha's mindfulness. This is incredibly potent medicine. So we can summarize all of this. And this is Tulku Urgyen, just the amazing Dzogchen master of the 20th century. The dude did 20 years of retreat. He was considered a Mahasiddha, a fully awake human being. His little summary of wise effort is short moments, many times. That's like wisdom from deep, deep, deep practice. And so there's some other things on retreat that help. So wise effort is the effort that works, right? The helpful effort. Not too tight, not too loose. Precise, relaxed, persistent, kind, right? This is the sweet spot. And what also helps is continuity of practice. Not thinking that practice on retreat is the sitting periods and the walking periods up on the sheet. Practice is also in between. And you're, you know, you've got a lot of good energy behind you. A lot of good effort. And you can reap the fruits of that now by digging in just a little more continuously. Keep your practice going. You know, walking out, walking to your walking place, walking back to the hall, getting tea, during meals, going to the restroom, you know, even going to sleep. Again, if you want this for yourself, this is helpful. And it's retreat, so it's not normal time. You know, it's sacred space. And we're set up for you to do just that. And what helps in activities between formal sessions is noting. You know, noting what the body's doing, reaching, stepping, you know, lifting, holding. The noting is helpful. Keeps the continuity going. So having said all this, I'm now going to completely contradict it. Sometimes our clear seeing, we can discern that, you know, I need a little extra help. The mind is so distracted right now. I want to actually have some tools that are going to sound a little different from everything I just said. You know, no ulterior motive with this moment, just for this moment. But you realize, wow, I've noticed like two breaths this whole sit. And, you know, it might be time then to take out a little first aid kit, mindfulness first aid kit, and try some tricks. And this can be informed by a sense of spiritual urgency. The fierce teaching that a lot of us have been going through with health issues, with loved ones dying, with family challenges, these nonetheless are teachers saying time is short. Like, if you want this for yourself, make it a priority. That's the teaching. And so we realize, you know, I'm sitting here just doing, you know, sitting and walking. And sometimes I want a little more support. I'm not just in wide open, unstructured practice. One way to give yourself support, we can just kind of call this, you can start playing a little, some mindfulness games with yourself. So one way of just bringing some playfulness into your practice is to give yourself some structure. So one way that some of you might know if you've done Goenka-style retreats is a body scan, where instead of just being aware of the sensation anywhere in the body, popcorn style, you know, you just start somewhere and systematically go through the body. Have I talked about zigzag mindfulness with you all? So, yeah. Well, I'm just going to make it really simple. You're basically working with the major joints in the body. in a zigzag pattern. So foot slash ankle, say on the right, you're going to zig over to the left knee and then zag over to the right hip. And then zig over to the left wrist and hand. Zag over to the right elbow. You're just going in a zigzag pattern. And then up to right elbow, left shoulder. And this is, again, this is just my own thing, so just play with it however you want. But from my left shoulder, I would go to right ear, crown chakra, and then I do the zigzag complete other way, going left ear, right shoulder, left elbow, right wrist. Now, it's a complex pattern for a reason. It's like giving our monkey mind a little ball to play with, something to occupy itself, so it's not just grabbing every thought coming by and swinging around like crazy, right? So that pattern gives conceptual mind a little thing to play with. And then you can, within that pattern, drop into the wise effort. Just this, exactly as it is. Relaxed, precise, kind, persistent. Don't worry if you have that exactly, because you can make it up yourself. Without spending too much time making it up, because then it just becomes a big discursive thing. So that's one thing you could try. Another little way to structure something is with walking meditation. And you can call this one Don't Miss a Step. We talked about this one too. You're going to do a very short walk. You're going to start. And you can only move forward if you're mindful. So you notice a step. If you know you've noticed that, which mindfulness does, then you can take a second step. And then if you realize you started to go to your third step but didn't notice the second one, you take back your third step and do the second step again. Mm-hmm. So you just don't miss a step. And you might only want to go 10 steps and then turn around. And this is going to be pretty slow. But boy, that is a strong way to help the mind find more concentration. I mentioned the other day just counting breath. And I call it the three twos. Notice the breath. Two breaths in the belly, two breaths in the chest, two in the nostrils. And then I said you can play with that. Make it the three threes. You know, stay in one area until you've noticed three consecutive breaths. And then move. Everyone clear on that? Mm-hmm. Sometimes people wonder, well, yeah, but I'm really working with choiceless awareness, so how do I add structure to that? You could count. You could just count. Notice things. Every time you notice something, count. Now, this is, I would say, the most troublesome of all these. All these don't really have a lot of negative side effects. The negative side effect is that you start counting and comparing from sit to sit, and keeping score. So, but if you're just really just, you just keep trying, nothing's working. And you're doing choiceless awareness mode. You know, counting breath works great for that. Walking without missing a step works great. But if you're really drawn to choiceless awareness practice, just count. You could count the whole sit if you wanted. Or just count for 10 minutes. You know, all the way up, as far as it goes. Just see what happens with that. And in all the cases within the structure we provide, we've given the monkey mind the little ball. Then we drop into the wise effort source. Remember that. We're still relaxed. You know, this sounds like we're trying to get somewhere, like it's striving. But no, you're doing it from that clear, kind place. Oh, monkey mind just needs a little something to play with. Okay, just a little more. I just want to now just switch gears a little bit and talk about the strength aspect. So we've been talking about energy and effort of the word virya. Strength. And the way the Buddha talked about strength, it's psychic strength, where we want to put our energy behind what matters most. And sometimes it takes strength to do it. We have to kind of cut through the BS, you know, and just say, no. No. I'm directing my energy here. And, you know, much of our practice, we're just open to what is. But sometimes with, you know, a pattern that's just, you've just tried everything, you know, and nothing works. I mean, the Buddha said, I don't know the exact quote, but at a time like that, you will need to clench your teeth and clench your fists and crush mind with mind. That's when you'll just have to play with that. So he talked about it that way, but he also talked about strength of just the quality you need to keep your eye on the prize. And in the context of retreat, that's our practice, you know. And so you might need strength to sort of keep the continuity going, you know. Sometimes it takes strength, discipline. I'll just read a poem from a Palestinian-American woman, Naomi Shihab Nye. Sharon Salzberg kind of introduced her to the Dharma world to her. This is called The Art of Disappearing. When they say, don't I know you? Say no. When they invite you to the party, remember what parties are like before answering. Someone telling you in a loud voice they once wrote a poem. Greasy sausage balls on a paper plate. Then reply. If they say, we should get together, say, why? It's not that you don't love them anymore. You're trying to remember something too important to forget. Trees. The monastery bell at twilight. Tell them you have a new project. It'll never be finished. When someone recognizes you in a grocery store, nod briefly and become a cabbage. When someone you haven't seen in 10 years appears at the door, don't start singing him all your new songs. You'll never catch up. Walk around feeling like a leaf. Know you could tumble any second. Then decide what to do with your time. The Art of Disappearing. Because we're on retreat, who she's really talking to is thinking mind. Don't you want to just come to the party? Hey, I'm going to invite you this time. I'm not going to just think all these crazy thoughts without you. You're invited. Remember what parties are like. A sausage ball on a greasy plate. Someone telling you they wrote a poem. Naomi Shihab Nye. We can shed all our poems and we're together again. So you want to hear the Buddha talking about strength? This is a classic quote from the Buddha. Relentlessly, I exerted myself, thinking, gladly would I let the flesh and blood in my body dry up, just leave the skin, tendons, and bones. But if I have not attained what can be reached through human firmness, human persistence, human striving, there will be no relaxing my persistence. From this heedfulness of mine was attained awakening. From this heedfulness of mine was attained the unexcelled freedom from bondage. You know, my first thought is, what a dude. But then I'm like, that's sexist. Why can't, you know, I mean, women have incredible strength. You know, we associate this with male. But we know, as mothers and sisters and just human beings, how much strength we need to be a loving, good person. So this is the Buddha. I mean, you know, there is a quality we can get. It's that kind of warrior quality where we're, remember what we talked about this morning, interested in pushing our boundaries because we're going to learn something. It's even fun. It's fun to sit with unpleasant. You know, how long can I do it? It's a challenge. Let it be fun because, you know, we all are heading for medical challenges if we don't have them already. And outside of our bidding, it's going to be very unpleasant. We want to get really good at practicing with the unpleasant. I mean, when I did stem cell therapy for my knee, which they couldn't do with anesthesia or lidocaine because it would mess up the stem cells, so I had a doc repeatedly, you know, taking a vial about this big and about that fat with a like 4-inch needle jabbing me in the knee and injecting all that fluid. It took an hour. It was freaking excruciating. And, you know, he kept telling me how well I was doing. I was not doing well. But what I was doing was being mindful of unpleasantness. And so, to him, it looked like I was super calm. I was like, so much aversion. It was so hard. But practice helped me just deal with it. You know, my teaching friend, Mary Powell, when she had hip replacement surgery, you know, she just said the pain afterwards was so strong, she couldn't even bring mindfulness to it. So we need to work with the unpleasant. It's a reality need, but let's not do it out of grimness. When you're choosing it, it's interesting and fun. And if it's grim, then don't do it, because that's just, it's not usually very helpful. Might as well end with a little humor. Do you know David Bader's book, For You, A Little Enlightenment? It's the book about Zen Judaism. The kind of Jewish, the Jubu humor. You don't know this? It's from his psycho-Semitic side. He says, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single oi. Be here now, be someplace else later. Is that so complicated? Though only your skin, sinews, and bone remain, though your flesh and blood dry up and wither away, yet shall you meditate and not stir until you have attained full enlightenment. But first, a little nosh. To find the Buddha, look within. Deep inside, you are 10,000 flowers. Each flower blossoms 10,000 times. Each blossom has 10,000 petals. You might want to see a specialist. Be aware of your body. Be aware of your perceptions. Keep in mind that every physical sensation is not a sign of terminal illness. Okay. Joyful interest. Because you want it. Remember, you want it. Joyful interest converted into energy and wise effort. Let's sit for a sec. Thank you.